The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
The Christchurch Mosque Stories Part 1, 2, 3 and 4 reflect the views and opinions as researched by Ben Vigin alone, and Ben Vigin alone is responsible for their content. In saying all of that, it's amazingly well backed up with incredible amounts of documentation, and I strongly suggest anybody wanting to know more about this very, very important aspect of the money financing of terrorism in New Zealand would basically best to come to my website, which is called the Dyslexic Detective, postmanproductions.com. In fact, look for the Dyslexic Autistic Detective if you're having trouble searching for Google, as sometimes the sites that are a little bit controversial tend to be shadow pushed down the bottom. And if you really like what I'm doing, then get in contact with me, media@gmail.com, and I'll give you the details of how to make not a donation but to become one of our subscribers, in which we provide a kind of an organic research service as well. So I don't believe in just begging for the sake of begging. I want everybody to have access, but I want my subscribers to get something special for it. So everything that I've come saying on these last four shows is backed up there. They've also been in State Secrets, so please do go and actually read those books, which are also on my site, and they again include additional documentation and bibliography to the research in these last four shows, which, to re-emphasise, is my views and my content, and I alone am responsible for it. Good morning, you're on the Deadline Report. This is Kira Ben-Vigin, Investigates. Now we're going on part three of the Christchurch shooting. I'm just going to dive straight into it today because we've got a lot to unpack. I'm breaking this in two halves. One part we carry on about the monetary aspect, which again actually leads us to who put Vladimir Putin in power, which is a very interesting story. It's a story about how the dumbasses complaining now are actually the same people that actually put Putin in back in the late 1990s, when he thought he was their boy and would open the USSR to the free market and basically out to be corporately pillaged. Again, not a particular topic that we get a lot of analysts in this, as corporate media has lost all sense of balance and objectivity in the last sort of 10 years or so. We will then also go, we're going to look at the Christchurch shooting from the issue about the camera and the sick problem in the second half, and we'll look at basically break down, you know, there's a lot of claims by so-called independent media. Now, the fact that they're actually funded by extremely dubious sources should be your first alarm bell. The second aspect, of course, is the fact that nobody kind of really seems to get this at the moment. You know, when you've got a person that is also involved in a political party process, they're not a journalist, okay? So stop thinking of these people as being journalists or independent commentators. They're not. They're pushing a political agenda. Get that into your heads right now. Generally, word of mouth, independent journalists, you can normally tell them, because they're the ones that turn up in the cars that are running on a smelly rag. Because guess what? There's not a lot of independent money. When someone turns up in a slick bus all painted up and got amazing graphics, probably kind of guess, you might ask yourself if you were smart, where's the money? And I'm quite frankly getting a little bit old out there, boys and girls. But let's go back to the issue about the money. So first of all, let's turn around again and go. So we've talked about in the past, or hopefully mentioned the fact that there were people at the mosque, and I met some very heavy people there as well, that were connected to terrorist attacks that took place in the Yemen and were subject to a drone. So one of all aspects, we know that there were people in the mosque that actually were not pure as the driven snow. We have also this issue about when you look at the Lucas Height reactor array that occurred in 2000, where again we were finding members of the refugee network that were coming into New Zealand were connected to some pretty serious hard-hitting people. I, again, have done cover this particular story previously. I think if you want to actually read my magazine article I co-wrote with Ian Wishart, whose politics is quite, again, like a lot of the guys I used to work with, he sort of veered off to the right and claims this thing called the centrist, which is anything but centrist. But we did do some good work together, and one of them was the Pacific Jihad, where we looked at the fact that actually there has been this terrorist money connection to New Zealand in the past. And if you look very carefully into the mosque politics, voting opened up in 83, because at that time what was happening was Muldoon was doing a deal with the Middle East via Adnan Khashoggi, who owned 33% so the Travelodge, which then became the Scenic Circle, mentioned the Paradise Papers. At the time, then when Khashoggi was actually also launching money for Vanuatu for weapons in relation to the ongoing civil war in Yemen, that's kind of stops and starts every once in a while, but as a case of inter-Arabic fighting, and normally because one side's supported by the one superpower and one side supported by the other. And that kind of politics has drifted over to this side of the world and via mosques in Sydney, Melbourne and New Zealand. Fact. Going, you can go out and look at things like International Review will cover, you know, cases going back to 2003 and instead of the Yemen case in 2014. You can look at Hamoud Mears talking about how Dr. Amin al-Zawahiri had set up fronts here. You can look at the Indian police coming to New Zealand to investigate the Tamil Tigers, the Sri Lankan Tigers, the same people, the element of the Sri Lankan Tigers and the related to Mus separatists that were involved in the Sri Lankan bombing right after Christchurch shooting. And previously when I've interviewed guys like Duke Henry and one of his offsiders from the former New Zealand East talked about the role of the Islamic extremists and the Abu Sayyaf, again, part of the sort of Islamic Jihad and splinter groups of Al-Qaeda. So we know all of that money was running through New Zealand and again had links via the refugee committees to the elements of the mosque. And again, ironically, in the case of the 1980s, a lot of that initial aspect of it was related to things like we saw a lot of the Somali and the Afghan community arriving in New Zealand at a time when the CIA were actually funding Osama bin Laden and they put out the wonderful movie, you know, Rambo in Afghanistan. We'd like to thank the gallant freedom fighters, you know, as they were called back then. And that infighting has also, throughout the years, spilled from amongst different mosques and different organisations. And we see from the money that was donated to the mosque that there's huge infighting there about where this money actually occurred. And the authorities are being very, very tight-lipped about what actually happened to that money. And there is no transparency about that. And what we do know, that there was this aspect of some very strange things going on with the mosque finances. And from my previous case, where I've looked at the Queenstown and we looked at the Millbrook Resort, we found one of the leading Freemasons of New Zealand. Again, there's this terrible thing where we're not allowed to mention Freemasons because suddenly you get called a conspiracy theorist. But again, if you look at The Guardian, they've talked very much about this network that's existing within Parliament of men who use the lodges. And what's actually happened is it's not that the Masonic Lodge is this, you know, Illuminati, but it's basically become a recruitment tool for right-wing organisations such as the Policy Exchange, which we'll get to and their links to the Christchurch shooting very, very, very shortly. And they are, again, a spin-off of the Atlas Network. And again, what we're talking about is this policy of, you know, using these Oxford University alumni to recruit and politically network is nothing particularly new, because Cecil Rhodes, who set up the Rhodes Millionaire Round Table, which became the model of using think tanks instead of, like, you know, trying to capture whole populations, you'd use think tanks who, by the power of journalists and intellectuals, would basically, you know, lobby your case for you. So again, David Mace, head of the Freemason, it's interesting because his current replacement is a specialist in taxation and charities. And I think everybody should be really looking at that and looking at what's going on with our charities and hard and fast thinking, what the hell is taking place here? Because I see something really, really dodgy. And it goes, has names that we link called like the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers. So, and I'll get to those because there is a direct link to those to the Christchurch shooting shortly. But David Mace, he was brought in at Millbrook, where they have regularly had these Five Eyes meetings. And in 2002, for example, they launched a meeting there, one at nearby Walters Peak Resort called Taking Back the Internet. And we see this lovely little pattern of these different kind of symposiums and, you know, conferences leading this like case about somehow the internet had to be taken back. From who? They didn't actually state at that point. It was just taking back the internet. And then we turn around, of course, we turn around and see, you know, there's Air New Zealand floundering like a, you know, landed whale, losing money hand over fist. And Jacinda Ardern turns around and she goes, I know, what we really need to do is we need to bring some really smart people in to find out why that's going to happen. I know just the man for the job. I'll hire Chris Luxton. And so he comes in as part of this policy advisory that looks at the Air New Zealand organisation. When he was, you know, running it, lost $500 million and, of course, doesn't appoint any particular blame for it. Jacinda Ardern comes along. She, you know, does all these wonderful taxpayer-funded selfies, wrapping herself up in a hijab, not actually considering the cultural appropriation or actually how that might look to the Islamic community, and then announces that she's going to turn around and they're going to make a movie with Nicky Caro, paid for by Disney, owned by BlackRock, called They Are Us. Again, linguistics. It's not they, These are not some strange people over there. They're my neighbours, thank you very much. They're my friends. They're the people I have cups of coffee with. Okay, they indicates the mindset that you don't consider them part of your group. And it's a bit of a, shows the, that there's a little bit of a falsehood going on in this whole they are us narrative. But instead, you know, what actually happens is they decide to put that in a hole because, again, the Islamic community goes, well, you know, this is really a little bit rich. Not to mention the fact that Nicky Caro's other movie was Mulan, which actually thanks the secret police of the Chinese who are actually suppressing the Islamic population in China. So, again, and of course, the funding for both those movies included frame Works, which was run by Willie Sargent, who is the public relations expert that Jacinda got a lot of her training for when she was selling neoliberalism. That's the idea where things sound woke, but you carry on spending right-wing and privatising assets to the benefit of the corporations. So, you know, she gets employed, and she, of course, what she turns around and does when, you know, she loses is that, well, not loses, she didn't lose the election because she got this wonderful job to go and take care of the Christchurch Call, which had been a charity set up and funded by people like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, because guess what? Their human rights records are so brilliant, and, you know, she gets paid $700,000 for it. And you go, well, actually, what we're seeing is whether it's Democrats, Republicans, Labour or National, what we get is politicians being funded and you know, on the side of corporations, increasingly putting in censorship for the internet, not because they want to drive away hate speech, but because they want to stop us from actually making these particular points so that you start seeing through their spin. And that's it. You know, Jacinda Ardern was a public relations expert. Okay, so quickly, so Mace was in charge of this thing called Food for Oil. And Food for Oil turned around and was paid out into different organisations, which included, in New Zealand's case, 80% of our milk was sold on behalf of us by entities like Vina Milk, a Vietnamese organisation, which was run with the assistance of Ian Robinson, the former head of the New Zealand Dairy Board, who run a tax haven called Proc Bank, with good old director on that, Ross Morant. Morant was on that, head of the formerly the Right of Centre Party. And this particular organisation was widely linked, and in fact, in my book, State Secrets, I widely link it to the Russian Mafia. And they were shareholders in another company called Wellnet Holdings, which dealt in, you know, metals and precious metals, which shareholders included Faye Rich-White from the Winebox Inquiry. And it also included, mostly included, 90% of it was made up of Chinese state-owned companies, including Bayo Steel, which David Mace, the head top mason in New Zealand, was a director of. Now, this particular company, this whole issue of this Food for Oil program and these companies we're talking about, 80% of them, the other companies that they were all running through was HSA Yemen. That was the top company for about 22 subsidiaries that were shipping dairy goods to Iraq as part of this Food for Oil program, which, to recap, is where at the end of the war, Saddam loses, they stick huge penalties on them and say, oh, you've got to be able to feed the people, so we'll allow limited amounts of goods to be imported. Saddam suddenly puts bribes on these, uses them to buy Eastern European weapons and fund terrorist organisations to give America a big pain in the ass. And again, Lucy Commissar, who writes an article about this, and she links these organisations specifically to Al-Taqwa. Now, Al-Taqwa, actually, the shareholder of that, which is, this is a bank in Switzerland, Lugano, was a neo-Nazi called Ahmed Huber who converted to Islamic cause. So, again, a lot of what my research has shown is that this whole idea that Islam and the far right are against each other is just, it's not a narrative that the people spinning the Christchurch shooting story the way they want to hear, because in actual fact, when we look at the money trail, we've got the same people funding both the far right and Islamic extremism in the same breath. And that was the case, is that the people that were sat on this particular board of this bank, Al-Taqwa, which financed, for example, the terrorist 9/11, included the Muslim Brotherhood and members that were running these companies which were shipping New Zealand dairy goods to Iraq. And at the same time, basically, that money was going directly into Islamic terrorist organisations. I'm actually writing in my own book, I'm getting quite into the extensive of the whole Food for Oil program, because again, there's been this whole massive cover-up that New Zealand wasn't involved in the Food for Oil program and that we didn't do anything wrong, and there's all these rumours that were flying around about the time of the wine box of a food for gun deal, which bear in mind is way before anyone ever actually heard about Food for Oil or New Zealand was actually a massive money laundering operation. It's all coming out, ladies and gentlemen, and it doesn't look good for our governments. And I don't mean just the Labour government, I mean both the governments, because this carried over an awfully long period. Which then brings me back, and we'll have a little bit of a break now, because we're going to go money, 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 and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about South Gunnery Finance and Alan Hubbard's connections to the Paradise Papers and some extremely dodgy organisations. And then we're going to look a little bit about the CGI of the what actually happened in Christchurch shooting and debunk the idea that this was fabricated, because that in itself is part of the cover-up. It's getting people distracted. They're so busy fighting about what went on in the camera, they're not looking at all this flow of this tsunami of crappy dark money that was flowing through Christchurch, the South Island, and New Zealand at this time, and which our governments did absolutely nothing to do. In fact, our governments are extremely culpable in the death. And if I was actually a member of those mosques, I would seriously go looking at getting a lawyer, getting a class action, and suing the crap out of this government, because effectively what they've done is they've turned a nod and a blind eye to a horrendous trade, which, and they're balls deep in blood. And so on that note, money, money, we'll see you shortly. Deadline Report, and this is Ben Vidgen Investigates, and we're talking about the Christchurch shooting, and we're talking about money, and we're going to be talking about CGI and what it's not. In the first case, I've explained to you the fact that there is actually something not quite right about there are participants in the mosque that, when you look at the infighting about where the money has gone for the donations, and you look at the history of basically groups that have come here, again, we have a case of a Tamil Tiger guy that was found here, arrived in New Zealand, turned out that he's buying equipment, he's part of the intelligence process. We've also got some very interesting kind of issues about the Labour government and their relationships with some of the Sri Lankan community out there. And by the way, I'm not having a go at the Sri Lankan community, the Indian community, the Chinese community. I'm just talking about basic due process and when something doesn't smell right. So sorry you guys got singled out, but it just happened to be the context of what we're talking about. So what I found very interesting was, during this occurred, you know, there was this terrible tragedy, people wanted to reach out and help, and one of the chairs that jumped up and turned around and said was, I know, Christchurch Foundation set up in 2017 in response to the Christchurch earthquakes. We're brilliant at charities. Give us all your money. We'll make sure that it all goes out to these people. Well, interesting enough, when I talked to members of the Linwood Mosque, the general response was that they hadn't seen any. And it's interesting because at that time, the Linwood Mosque was sort of being singled out by the media and the Emirates, the people that fund the... Not only do the New Zealand Emirates, by the way, fund the America's Cup, they also fund the war that's happening in the Yemen. And again, that's a war which, same as with Sudan, that is borders and genocide. And yet we're quite happy to take their money for our billionaires' yacht races. And our governments think this is a great thing. And who can remember not forget the picture of Mike Moore, future chairman of the World Trade Organization, bouncing up and down on a pony next to Faye Richwood as Labour and the merchant bankers got into business. And then we had the Winebox Inquiry. It turned out that actually those guys weren't as clean as they looked and they all went off to Switzerland. And I must come back to that because we really must one day turn around and talk about how New Zealand's dodgy money actually helped put Vladimir Putin in power. And we're not going to have enough time to do that today. However, sticking to the issue is that, okay, so people don't donate any money to the Christchurch Foundation. And I know a little bit about the people behind the Christchurch Foundation. One of the chairmen was Humphrey Rollison, who's a very, very important person in Christchurch, very much part of the Old Boys Network, and rah, rah, rah. And he also, has kind of been a very big deal at the Christchurch Press for a number of years before I think he eventually sold that interest along with South Canterbury Finance, which he let go of about a year before it turned out that the company was actually a lemon and had been overstating its assets, and which no one's ever actually asked them about or actually held them like, saying, well, wait a minute, you were the boss of this place along with Alan Hubbard. Like, surely you must have known what was going on. But again, in this wonderful world of New Zealand, we don't ask the people at top awkward questions. Don't be silly. I also know that he had a company called Scales Trading Limited that were actually named in a, became in a Privy Council case that actually disappeared off the internet when I first published this fact for a while, but I can now find a number of sources back to it again. But basically it was saying, well, actually, you guys complained because you had to deal with the Russians and you're moaning about the fact that actually they forced you to do this money laundering for you. But basically the verdict in the Privy Council ruling, and I'm summing it up, is, paraphrasing, is you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. So we've got a case of South Canterbury Finance involved with people that were laundering money for the Russian mafia. We also have a case of Scales Trading importing Russian military hardware. Remember how I kept on talking about there were these stories about butter for guns deals, and Jim, one of the diplomats, Jim Bolger, mentions it in a book, I think it's called Bringing Home the Cows. Says, oh yes, they offered us a nuclear submarine and we all laughed at that, ha ha ha. Oh yes, that's the source of that rumour. What he didn't tell you was that actually Pepsi bought the submarine, and what they did was they didn't actually buy the submarine. What they did was they traded it. So they traded it for oil. In exchange, that oil then got sold to cover the debts that Pepsi owed the Russian government, which was the same proposal which they were actually offering to us, New Zealand, when those very, very senior Russian figures flew into New Zealand just after 1991 to Millbrook, where, guess what, we just happened to have good old David Mace from Bayo Steel and involved in the whole companies like, as I explained to you, Wilnet Holdings and Bayo Steel. So they flew in there and they did this particular deal there. There were these stories about, that never happened. But meanwhile, Indonesia did exactly the same thing, which is kind of actually also interesting when you think about it, because one of the key players that featured in the Australian version of the investigation, Food for Oil, where it was called Weapons for Wheat, was the same company in Indonesia that would be routing dairy products into Iraq that would actually end up in the hands of people that were on the board of Ataqa, a Islamic neo-Nazi finance terror bank in Switzerland. Golly gosh, there can't possibly be any connection to that whatsoever at all. But yes, so he, and then of course he had companies like, he was involved in the board of directors of my book. I say he was linked into a company called Stephen Andrews, another arms dealer selling weapons to Israel. And that company had a very interesting history. You want to know more about it, read my book. So I go, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, let's look a bit deeper. Turns out that one of the strategic partners to the Christchurch Foundation is another charity called the Tel Aviv Foundation. And again, if you look at the Policy Exchange, and one of the articles that are made about the fact is the Policy Exchange is extremely super influential right-wing right-wing organisation that's operating out of in the heart of Westminster at the moment, is that what they do is they set up charities, and then the charities, which are, you know, all run by this old boy network, you know, with this old funny handshake alumni, they turn around and they start actually donating to each other, which is okay, because then you don't donate money to that charity and you get a tax rebate. Much like, you know, John Key, when he came into government, well, let me see, what did he do with charities? Oh, that's right, he changed the rules. So instead of you making a minimum and maximum donation of 5% and a ceiling of 5,000, you can now get a 33% rebate and you can donate money unlimited. So if you donate money to a charity and then that charity donates to another charity, and then that charity, you end up actually, in the case of, I think, the Robin Hood Foundation, which I think is, I can't say that's the charity that Jacinda Ardern worked for when she was, after her stint for working for Tony Blair's neoliberal government, but I can say that when she went to New York at that time to work in a soup charity, there was a charity called Robin Hood Foundation whose founder, John Griffiths, offered his mansion for Jacinda to have her wedding, which never eventuated, along with his whose best partners with the man they call the Wizard of Wall Street, who John Key's had lots and lots of talks about New Zealand become a, you know, a tax haven for billionaire bunkers. So all very, very cosy. I bet you if you'd gone to that wedding, there would have been people from the National Party and Labour Party at that particular wedding. But yes, he changed the law so that this now can actually goes on. And actually, when we get into the issue of Tel Aviv Foundation, I suggest you all go and have a look at it. But I'm just going to concentrate very much closely on Nathan Jacobson, who's this man that kind of the American authorities were after. And he got arrested for money laundering, and then he got let loose, but he made a plea deal. But the real significant part is here he is on a chat room with Eric Prince, who's kind of like the guy that ran all the mercenary operations in Iraq for the Americans, while we've got Tim Spicer operating on the other side for all the Commonwealth troops and then hiring mercenaries to have a coup d'etat in PNG, which is owned by a mining interest that were also the same people that had involved in the coup that provided weapons to Savinia Mbuku in 1987. In fact, that same mining groups of people, you can see Vanuatu, Tonga, Solomons, each of these cases where something's gone boom in the last 15 to 20 years New Zealand history, going back to the 1980s, we can find Adnan Khashoggi, the man that provided the bridging finance for Muldoon's think bigs, and mining interests are at the centre of all these things go boom. So this is the partners that the Christchurch Foundation would actually partner up with. And now what we're seeing since I made this point in 2019 is that there have been, Deloitte's have actually looked at Christchurch Foundation and said, well, we're not really impressed by your transparency. And again, we've asked for certain things and you actually haven't given us. And it's sort of, there's been a step away. Nobody wants to kind of like slap down the Christchurch Foundation, but they're having problems getting money from the Christchurch City Council because it's become pretty apparent, like without the Christchurch shooting and the donations, who, again, we've got people at the Linwood Mass saying they never got anything from it, and then suddenly the local press turned against those people when beforehand they were the hero of the day. But what we're finding is that there are questions basically about the transparency of those particular organisations. And I said, you know, when we look at the Robin Hood Foundation, which I missed out, we find that, you know, you donate $1 to that organisation if you're in the know in the system, and you get $48 back for your charity. So it suddenly makes all that billionaire fellow infantry look quite a bit suspect. And a case that's sort of interesting, because what we also have in Christchurch was we had a case where Mozambique, again, UN charity was cause was corrupted. In this case, the money that was meant to go to help Mozambique actually combat climate change was used to buy Israeli gunships and other weapons and provide luxury mansions to the dictators or the military, you know, the dark sides of the military of the Mozambique. And it turned out that Mozambique was doing this very much in conjunction with VTB Bank, a Russian bank basically was, you know, very much group of the bunch of oligarchs that were all down here being welcomed, and same, you know, they're offering to buy the America's Cup in 2000, I think as late as 2014. Mikhail Kumovich, this was the bank, this was the interest that he was involved in. There was also Credit Suisse was actually involved, which is the same bank that Stephen Jennings, who was the man that kind of was involved in the privatisation of New Zealand Rail, went to work for, and then they went into Russia at the end of the late 1990s when basically Russians said, well, hey, Gorbachev said, if you save us, you know, we'll open our legs to free trade and we'll allow you to kind of buy up and privatise all our particular assets. And so, you know, they started allowing this to actually happen, and because they did this pilot model where the Bolshevik biscuit company went in there, bought up a $10 million company, the Credit Suisse went in there, bought up the BBC, Bolshevik biscuit company, worth give or take about, it was actually worth about $3 million, and he got it for $300,000, and that became the model all in St. Petersburg. So all of Putin's mates were getting awfully, awfully rich out of this, and all this dodgy money was going into their hands and then ending up in banks that had been largely set up by, you know, the CIA and their buddy Khashoggi in places like Vanuatu and the Pacific and Niue and Cook Islands and so on, to the point that actually the Paradise Papers turned out that actually New Zealand alone is mentioned 60,000 times, along with chief banks, including banks like the ANZ Bank, which again, people that were involved in the Food for Oil scandal were actually also at that time went on to later on to chair the ANZ, which later on is what John Key went on to chair, having previously been chaired by John Luxon. As you know, it gets very, very cozy at the top. And these guys, this absolute flow of terrorist money, which I said again, Anton Sphere, there's another source that will confirm to you that the Muslim Brotherhood were being financed by American interests. And a lot of these were with banks in Switzerland, including Al Taqwa, that were in turn funding Osama bin Laden back in the day when he was considered America's good guy and before he turned around and went rogue on them and blew up the trade towers in 9/11. Which, that's another story we'll have for another day. Now, the issue going back to the Christchurch Foundation is that we see happening in this particular area that, not just the Christchurch Foundation, in terms of going back again, this Credit Suisse and Mozambique area, was that they were running through Christchurch law firms, and those law firms in themselves had people that were hosting events like the Global Party Charity in Akara, which again is part of this whole area of charities that donate to charities. And when we start to look at some of the people involved in the Global Charity, you get some extreme bells ringing. Now, what should be happening in New Zealand is that organisations like the Serious Fraud Office, who again were up to some very interesting things in the last election, but we'll save that for another day. The election before the last election, I could say. But the Serious Fraud Organisation should be looking at a number of large charities that exist in Christchurch in New Zealand and really going, well, why aren't you being transparent? And we should be hearing that, because the reality is we are seeing hundreds of millions of dollars washed from New Zealand that are going to extremely dodgy causes. And again, I wrote two books about this back in 1999. I was told I was a conspiracy theorist, and again, somebody tried to pass a copy of my book to a senior editor of a major newspaper. I don't read conspiracy theories, because we refused to believe this was actually taking place. And yet, what we now know, 2017, with Nikki Haga saying it's a fact that New Zealand is a money laundering haven, which John Key was trying to deny, but we're not actually doing anything about it. And that as a result is getting people killed. And I believe, in my opinion, we need to look really hard and fast if you want to know what really happened in the Christchurch shooting in relation to the finance. This is Ben Vigen on the Deadline Report, and we'll talk about CGI next week. The Christchurch Mosque Stories, Part 1, 2, 3 and 4 reflect the views and opinions as researched by Ben Vigen alone, and Ben Vigen alone is responsible for their content. In saying all of that, it's amazingly well backed up with incredible amounts of documentation, and I strongly suggest anybody wanting to know more about this very, very important aspect of the money financing of terrorism in New Zealand would basically best to come to my website, which is called the Dyslexic Detective, postmanproductions.com. In fact, look for the Dyslexic Autistic Detective if you're having trouble searching for Google, as sometimes the sites that are a little bit controversial tend to be shadow pushed down the bottom. And if you really like what I'm doing, then get in contact with me, media@gmail.com, and I'll give you the details of how to make not a donation but to become one of our subscribers, in which we provide a kind of an organic research service as well. So I don't believe in just begging for the sake of begging. I want everybody to have access, but I want my subscribers to get something special for it. So everything that I've come saying on these last four shows is backed up there. They've also been in State Secrets, so please do go and actually read those books, which are also on my site, and they again include additional documentation and bibliography to the research in these last four shows, which, to re-emphasise, is my views and my content, and I alone am responsible for it.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community Access Media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.